This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
To pause or not to pause production, that's the question facing OPEC today. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Like broader financial markets this week, oil prices have been up, then down. They're now up again. Today, the Brent and West Texas crude benchmarks are up 2.3% to $70 and $67 a barrel. The fluctuations have been on concern about whether the Omicron variant of coronavirus could lead to further lockdowns and slow demand for oil. In a few hours, members of the oil-producing group OPEC and its allies will decide whether to continue putting more oil into the market in order to help lower prices. But many are concerned that could lead to a glut of supply amid a hefty dose of uncertainty about whether Omicron will actually cause global demand to slow. From Dubai, the BBC's Samir Hashmi explains there are several options on the table for OPEC.
According to their current policy, they have been adding 400,000 barrels of oil per day until next year. Now, given the wild swings, the two options in front of OPEC are that one, they continue with the policy, more supply in the market and further price drops. The second is if they decide to pause, then that could lead to limited supply in the market, which puts them on a confrontational path with the United States, the White House, which has been publicly pressurizing OPEC Plus to increase supply so that prices don't rise further. There is also a third option on the table of actually OPEC Plus reversing their policy and cutting down on supplies, which could raise prices. But that looks a very unlikely scenario. But what most analysts feel is that given the current scenario, especially with Omicron now and the uncertainty around it, OPEC Plus will most likely put a pause on its current policy and not add any more supply, at least in the short term.
As you said, OPEC has been scaling back last year's record cut in production, but output is still below the planned level. Are some producers struggling to increase their capacity?
Well, that's right. Some producers have been struggling to increase their supplies. It's not a very straightforward process to ramp up supply in one go. And that's why a lot of countries have been kind of struggling to meet their quotas that were allotted. And that's why you see that reflecting in the overall supplies that are there in the market right now.
Not quite like turning on a tap of water, is it? The BBC's Samir Hashmi for us in Dubai. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Checking some other numbers now. Global stocks are following U.S. markets lower this morning. Benchmarks in Asia ended their session largely mixed. Here in London, Paris, Frankfurt, and Milan, though, shares are down in the wide range of 0.6% to 1.2%. Shares of GlaxoSmithKline are slightly bucking that trend, though. They're up 0.2% in New York ahead of the opening bell, after the company said its COVID treatment drug is effective against the Omicron variant. Elsewhere, Southeast Asian ride-hailing giant Grab will make its public market debut today on the NASDAQ in New York. The BBC's Mariko Oi has more on that.
You know, it's remarkable to think that less than 10 years ago, it was a very simple taxi company, but it has become one of the most dominant super apps. So offering not just rides, but also food delivery and even financial services. And now this company is going to list in the United States on the NASDAQ later today, becoming probably the biggest Southeast Asian company to list in the U.S. It has chosen to list in a unique way through a SPAC instead of a conventional IPO. So that's been getting a lot of hype.
And so you're going to chat to the CEO later today. What are you going to ask him about?
I think that is one question that I'm going to ask him about. Why did you choose to list through a SPAC instead of a conventional IPO? Because it's known to be a lot faster and a lot cheaper to list, but also the company manages to avoid a lot of public scrutiny or, you know, investor scrutiny as well. You know, Grab hasn't made a profit at all. It expects to do so in 2023, but we don't know whether they can. Also, the fact that the founder, the CEO, can keep 60% voting rights right when he only owns about 2% of ordinary shares, you know, all those issues, that could be scrutinized in the conventional IPO, but the company decided to go through SPAC. So I'm definitely going to ask him that. But I think it is a very exciting night. Apparently, the company's drivers and all the delivery guys will be there as well, ringing the bell. And this is the first time that the NASDAQ is doing a remote opening bell ceremony in Southeast Asia. So it is quite historic in that sense as well.
And I guess just one last question. Why did it decide to do a SPAC listing in the US as opposed to another market closer to home?
I think a lot of Southeast Asian companies have been looking to raise funds in the US where they can make big news headlines. There were reports that Grab was thinking of a secondary listing in Singapore, but Singapore has only started allowing SPAC listing about 2-3 months ago. So SPAC was only available in the US when Grab was thinking of going public. But now that it can be listed in the US, they might have other options as well.
The BBC's Mariko Oy. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Victoria.
To Turkey now, where President Erdogan abruptly replaced his finance minister overnight. That's as worries continue to grow about the recent plunge in the nation's currency, which has shed nearly half its value this year. Lütfi Elvan spent just a year in the job and reportedly disagreed with the president's low interest rate policy, which has stoked red-hot inflation over the last few years. Tim Ash, an economist at Blue Bay Asset Management, explains what Mr. Elvan's departure means for the future of the Turkish economy.
We have Erdogan unchained over the last two decades. Erdogan's always had these views that high interest rates cause inflation. But over that 20-year period, he's had a succession of other members who have been pretty orthodox. They've kept him from doing what he wants to do. He's now forced them all out. There's no one left. And all the guys left, and it is guys mostly. I mean, there's very few women in the Erdogan cabinet, unfortunately. They all basically go along with whatever he wants to do. And he wants to cut interest rates. And that's really dangerous for the Turkish economy at this point in time.
Now, yesterday, the central bank intervened in this plunge that we've seen in the lira, presumably to stop that plunge. It hasn't really worked. And the central bank chief is now slated to speak to investors today. I mean, is that going to soothe anyone's concerns about what's happening in Turkey?
Not really. I mean, they tried it before. Central banks very often, when faced by unusual pressure on exchange rates, may begin to sell their own foreign currency reserves. Turkey has dollars, it has gold. People on the street are buying dollars, right? They don't trust the lira. So the central bank provides additional dollars to the market to try and smooth what's going on in terms of market dynamics. Problem for Turkey is that, you know, it doesn't have a lot of these dollars in its reserve buffers, so it doesn't have much money to spend. You probably remember Erdogan's son-in-law, Al-Barak, was the economy guru, and under him, in 2018-2019, they used about $128 billion in reserve intervention through the state banks. And it failed to stem the lira's decline, right? So if it failed then, it's very unlikely to succeed now.
The interesting thing is sort of this dynamic between what the government says and what is actually happening on the ground, because these moves in the lira are actually having real effects on people who live there. Erdogan, last month after the central bank cut rates again, vowed to lift the scourge of high interest rates from the backs of our people. But really, I mean, isn't all of this bad for those who are living there, suffering from 20% inflation and a plunging value of their currency?
Well, sure. And it looks like inflation may well go towards 30% by year end. So, you know, we all know globally, what high inflation means, it hits living standards, it makes people poorer, it reduces their spending power. So absolutely, definitely. I mean, it's hurting people. But the problem for Erdogan is thinking about elections. He has to go to elections in 18 months. Previously, forcing interest rates lower and trying to boost credit to boost the economy, to boost real GDP growth and construction and real estate and all those things have delivered him victories over the last 20 years. So this is what he's done in the past. He thinks it's going to work this time.
Are people fed up, do you think?
Well, opinion polls suggest that sort of 2/3 or more of the population are not really happy with the course of economic policy. In working in Erdogan's favor is public finances are in an okay shape. Public sector debt to GDP is about 40%. Think the EU average is well over 80% now. So they've got a bit of fiscal space that they can spend on these social benefits that he hopes will win in the election ultimately. So, you know, he's struggling. Opinion polls, you know, it's the lowest he's been in 20 years. But he thinks this mix of low interest rates, getting credit going again, getting growth going again, and probably a shift more towards a nationalist agenda will win in this election.
And certainly not a change in monetary policy is ahead if this finance minister shakeup shows us anything. Tim Ash at Blue Bay Asset Management, thanks for breaking this down for us.
My pleasure.
You can find more about the situation in Turkey on our website, bbc.com/news. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.